Okay, today for our next It From Qubit virtual seminar, we're very happy to have our own Vijay Balasubramanian to tell us about geometric secret sharing in a model of Hawking radiation. Please take it away, Vijay.
Great. Well, thanks for the invitation to speak. And it's kind of very nice to do this when we're all stuck at home. And indeed, I'll tell you about geometric secret sharing in a model of Hawking radiation. So this talk is based upon this archive paper, which came out last month, 2003-05448, which was written together with Arjun Kar, Ankar Parikar, Gabor Sharoshi and Tomonori Ugajin. And I think all or most of them are in the audience. So if people have questions, we'll sort of take them collectively and answer them together. We can treat this as an extended It From Qubit group meeting or family meeting or whatever it is. Okay, great. Wonderful. So let me start. So why isn't this moving? Now it isn't moving. Ah, okay. Great, wonderful. So let me start by talking a little bit about the black hole information puzzle, which I think we're all very excited about to think about again these days. So, you know, what is the puzzle, first of all? So we've known since the 1970s that in semi-classical gravity, black holes act effectively as if they have a very large entropy and evaporate thermally, leading to loss of unitarity in quantum mechanics. So the first question is that even a surprise? Well, it's certainly not surprising in some sense that in a semi-classical treatment, this might happen because in some obvious sense, a semi-classical or effective field theory treatment clearly does not know about the microstates of the black hole, doesn't have them encoded, and therefore could very well lose information. And there are actually a number of arguments that people have made over many years that the effective field theory description of black holes is incomplete. For example, already in the early 1990s, people like Toft and Susskind were arguing that there were all kinds of problems in the effective field theory description, that there were things like black hole complementarity, and so on. A couple of precise versions of that kind of argument came, for example, from the Verlin days, in which one tried to write down, and actually my own first paper as a PhD student was with Herman Verlinde, trying to argue that if you tried to describe the process of black hole formation and evaporation, effective field theory, then you couldn't at the same time describe the modes that would fall in to make the black hole, the modes that would go out to make the Hawking radiation at the same time, because they would interact and, you know, do something with each other that you couldn't describe in effective field theory. So these arguments have been around of this kind for a long time. And of course, Mathur and then Amps, Anheri, Marolf, Polchinski, and Sully, you know, developed these things further in things like the firewall paradox. So what's the problem, right? I mean, it's clear that semi-classical gravity is going to have some issues. So the problem is we'd love to know, especially if you have a string theory or a quantum theory of gravity, you'd like to know how you get around this. Ultimately, what's the mechanism which avoids these kinds of problems that are evident in the semi-classical theory? So now, again, over a couple of decades, we clearly now have examples in string theory, quantum gravity, where you can explicitly demonstrate the existence of the microstates necessary to preserve unitarity. This goes back to, for example, Stromager and Vafa. And clearly also the ADS-CFT correspondence clearly suggests that black hole physics should be unitary. You know, the dual field theory is unitary. And so in that sense, there's no problem, right? We know by the existence of the ADS-CFT correspondence that black hole evaporation ought to be unitary. So really then the question is mechanism, where is the information stored in an evaporating black hole? And there again, there have been many suggestions over the years, and the hypothesis that black hole microstates or what fell in to make the black hole in the context of an evaporating black hole in flat space, that this information, there's a hypothesis that the information about the microstates is encoded in the entanglement between Hawking radiation and the black hole interior. So that's a nice idea. And really the question has been, is there a way of showing this explicitly? So all of this narrative that I just gave, you know, in some sense revolves around saying that if you know the microstates, if you can enumerate them, you know, talk about them explicitly, then there are clearly ways you can imagine of avoiding, you know, unitarity issues with black holes. So to me, the real surprise over the last year has been, we apparently can make progress in semi-classical gravity already. I find this amazing because I would have thought you needed explicitly to know all the microstates to be able to make progress on the question of unitarity in gravity. So there's been so much work over the last year. And here I have a selection of these sort of authors who pioneered the work. So one way in which people have approached this is by thinking about the page curve. And the reason why the page curve is interesting as an avenue to think about black hole unitarity is many of the discussions about recovery of information from black holes revolve around tiny effects, exponentially small effects at very late times and so on and so forth. But the problems with the page curve are an order one, are large effect. So what's the problem? The problem is that if you naively accept Hawking's calculation, compute the density matrix of the Hawking radiation, you know, it's thermal and stuff, then if you compute the entropy of that radiation, it increases monotonically with time, which clearly violates unitarity. And what you expect instead is that if you have a black hole evaporating in flat space, well, the entropy should increase of the radiation, then decrease, because eventually there's nothing for the radiation to be entangled with, and therefore because the black hole evaporated, so the entropy should be going back down to zero. Or if you come to equilibrium with the black hole, as you would in anti-de Sitter space, then you have some black hole with fixed mass in equilibrium with the radiation, then you'd expect the entanglement entropy of the radiation to sort of top off and slow down and become flat. So the question that people have considered over the last year is, how does this happen? Right, and so there have been many ideas, and the most distilled version of those ideas in the last year has had the following character. So it's this island formula that people have been talking about, which goes like this: you take the effective field theory entropy associated with the Hawking radiation, and you add, of the Hawking radiation plus an island, a disconnected region within the gravitating part of the space-time. Let's call that B. So you take the union of the radiation and the gravitating, and some island in the gravitating part of the space-time, compute the effective field theory entropy of that, then compute area over 4 g Newton of this disconnected island, and then minimize over the islands, and you know, magically, you get back the page curve. Now, in some circumstances, when you look at it, to be honest, you know, it can look like, well, you put the answer in by hand, because look, if you have a black hole and you say that you're going to take the entropy to be the minimum of a surface that's placed inside the minimum of the area of the of a surface placed inside the black hole, and the radiation, and the radiation entropy happens to be more than the area of the horizon, of course you'll get the horizon area. So it may seem like you kind of put the answer in by hand. But of course, that's not the case, really, because there are now some arguments for where this formula comes from, which, for example, include directly deriving it from using the replica trick for the entropy, entanglement entropy of the radiation. So that's very cool. So what do we want to do? So much of the evidence that we've gathered so far in this area has been in two-dimensional gravity, of course, because we've got lots of control. And so with that in mind, there are several things that one would love to do to take these developments to the next step. So here are some things that certainly it seemed to us would seem nice to do. One is we'd like to know whether and how the island formula extends to higher dimensions. We'd like to find other ways of justifying or proving the island formula. Where does it come from? How do we know it's correct? And so on. And you might ask whether now that we have such sort of tools and such ideas, can we ask other sorts of questions, such as, for example, can we ask questions about the entanglement structure within the Hawking radiation? You know, one of the reasons why that's interesting is if you have a black hole that actually evaporates completely in flat space, it's gone eventually. There's no interior left to be entangled with. So, you know, the entropy of the radiation, is zero because everything's gone. But if you really think that you've recovered the information that, about the black hole, namely, let's suppose the black hole was, you know, collapsing elephants or encyclopedia or whatever, then after the radiation, you should be able to decode the fact that it was elephants that made the black hole by looking at the entanglement structure within the Hawking radiation. So really, the full answer to the question of how do we recover unitarity is you have to know how to decode the Hawking radiation. So, you know, it's interesting, therefore, to think about what is the entanglement structure within the Hawking radiation. You'd like to also know answers to questions like, suppose I collect part of the black hole radiation, then can I recover part of the black hole interior, or do I really need all of it? You know, things of this kind. So the question is whether you can shed light on these kinds of questions. Okay, so we're going to go after these issues, and we're going to go after these issues in the context of the next higher dimension from two dimensions, which is three-dimensional gravity. Okay. Oh, by the way, feel free to interrupt and ask questions at any time. And please do. And we'll try to answer your questions as best we can. Okay. So the setup for this talk is going to be three-dimensional gravity. And why? Well, it has many conveniences, perhaps not quite as many conveniences as two-dimensional gravity, because we can't calculate quite as exactly, but three-dimensional gravity is a wonderful thing to work on. That's because, for example, there are black holes. So the phenomena we're interested in, the BTZ, appear, for example, in things like the BTZ black holes. What's more, there's a zoo of interesting solutions, these multi-boundary wormholes in three-dimensional anti-de Sitter space. So these are essentially, from each asymptotic region perspective, it's a black hole, but it's multiple black holes connected through a joint wormhole. So you can repose many of the questions we're interested in those sorts of contexts, and they become sharper. So that's a useful thing about them. Wonderfully, just like in two dimensions, there's no local graviton, so we don't have to deal with dynamics. That's awesome. And you can construct solutions when you need to construct them through global identifications of hyperbolic space. So that's a very, very convenient feature of three-dimensional gravity that gives us lots of, that gives people lots of power in thinking about these systems. And finally, because things are simple enough, you can often solve the equations explicitly, for example, to find various kinds of geometries and so on and so forth. But also, because things are simple enough, you can also kind of reason everything out in pictures. So I'm going to exploit that during this talk to basically explain all of our calculations using diagrams of the geometries we construct. It makes it much easier to explain what's going on. So let me start out by describing our basic setup, right? So the basic setup is we're going to start the basic geometry we're going to use again and again is the BTZ black hole geometry. I remind you that this is the Penrose diagram of the BTZ black hole. There are two asymptotic regions. This is the classic thermofield double setting. Here are the horizons, and here is the past, the future and the past singularities. Now, the red line here is supposed to be the trajectory of a brain. So, you know, you can put down brains in such systems. They have some, you know, some action on the world volume. You can solve for their trajectories. And here I've illustrated one such trajectory of a brain moving through the system. Okay, great. So that's our basic setup. Now, what do we want to do? Well, we're interested in talking about a black hole which actually has microstates, a single boundary black hole that has microstates. So to do that, we're going to use a trick borrowed from Kurkul and Aldesena and from work by the group at Stanford. And the trick is as follows. So we note first that the BTZ black hole drawn here can be thought of as a wormhole between two regions A and B. So here I've drawn the equal time slice, right? So on the equal time, on the time symmetric section of the BTZ black hole, you have a wormhole of this form. The dashed line is supposed to be the horizon. This is the bifurcated horizon. And we want to get rid of the second asymptotic region. That's because with two asymptotic regions, there are two field theories that are dual to the space, et cetera. Instead, we want to think about one asymptotic region and then some microstates inside here behind the horizon. And so strictly speaking, you know, if you really want to do that kind of thing, you know, you'd like to have a solution in string theory, honest to God, with some D-brains sitting in the middle and some complicated intersecting geometry, or perhaps you could take one of the fuzzball solutions of Mathur and Josef Baena and others and put that behind. So that would be a, you know, proper, fully string theoretic understanding of the microstates, perhaps behind the horizon of the black hole. But instead, we're going to model it as follows. We're going to imagine that behind the horizon, there is some end of the world brain. And the end of the world brain is going to have some states on it. And those states are going to be our model of the microstates of this black hole. So we're thinking about states here that have some mass m in the microcanonical window associated with the entropy of this coarse-grained horizon. Okay. We also imagine that this black hole can radiate, and which it does, of course. And we'll imagine, also following recent work, that we put a reservoir just outside the ADS boundary over here, just outside A, and that there are transparent boundary conditions here, which allow the radiation to enter this reservoir and kind of come to equilibrium with it. So in this reservoir, we're also going to take gravity to be weak. Now, how do you engineer such a setting? You know, to really do this properly, we should really be thinking about the ADS throat as really being embedded in a flat space geometry, because after all, we originally derived ADS spacetimes in the ADS CFT context as near horizon limits anyway of asymptotically flat black holes. So you can certainly imagine sort of embedding such a, you know, the ADS throat in an asymptotically flat geometry, and then allowing the asymptotically flat geometry to be the reservoir. We're going to sort of mock that up by simply declaring that there is a reservoir out here that collects the radiation. Again, consistent with a number of these recent papers on related subjects. Okay. We'll also take that the microstates in question here are maximally entangled with the K-Hawking quanta out here. And we'll distill that entanglement into some subspace of the end of the world brain and write the state that entangles the radiation here in the reservoir with the microstates in this way. So there's some entangled state of the radiation and the microstates. Okay, so that's our setup. And we want to understand all of the recent questions about, suppose I compute the entanglement entropy of the radiation, you know, how much is it? As the radiation increases in quantity, namely as I increase K and make, so we're gonna have a radiation protocol where we keep increasing the amount of radiation K by hand. And we wish to ask, if you do that, will you run into problems with the page curve and so on in this setting? And again, this is in the three-dimensional gravity. Okay, so let's go to the next step. So our next step is as follows. So as I told you, we're supposed to have a brain here, and which contains these microstates. And I would imagine that the theory living on that brain is itself a conformal field theory. So I'm going to let the end of the world brain be described by a CFT and a large N CFT. And so if it's a large N CFT, so this is our model of the microstates, right? So it's a large N CFT describing the microstates. So if that's the case, well, you know, I should be able to replace that large N CFT by its own holographic dual. So that's being shown here as this gray disk. So you can imagine this as saying that originally our model was you have the, you know, the black hole region, you can, you know, the asymptotic region, you come to the horizon, you pass into the behind the horizon, and behind there was some complicated, you know, brain that contained that represented the physics of the microstates. But now we replace that also by geometry, which is this disk here. We call this disk the inception disk. And of course, since this inception disk is simply dual to the theory on the brain sitting in here, it can have a central charge, a length scale, a Newton constant different from the original space. The properties of the geometry in here, in this gray disk here, are whatever they have to be in order to provide a dual to the end of the world brain. So that's our setup. Now, in some recent work by Almheri Mahajan and Maldacena, you may recall that they were dealing with a setting with two-dimensional gravity coupled to conformal field theory, and they put in the holographic dual to the conformal field theory and basically grow an extra dimension, a third dimension, use that to try to prove the island rule. One attractive thing about this scenario is you don't grow an extra dimension, you just sort of extend, you make the geometry longer, if you like. You originally have this part of the geometry and you make it longer by putting in the dual to the system that contains the microstates. Okay, so now suppose in this setting, after you've written down the dual to the states in the end of the world brain, suppose you go ahead and trace out the Hawking quanta. The reason for doing that is, well, you know, that they're over here in the reservoir and you certainly can't measure them. So if you can't measure them, you should trace them out. Okay. And if you do that, the state in the brain should be mixed, maximally mixed. And thus the inception disk should contain a black hole. Okay. So in this geometry, there is a black hole. Did somebody have a question?
Yes. So is this intended to be a picture of the geometry at something like the surface of time symmetry in the full 3D geometry? Okay.
Yes, that's exactly what it's supposed to be. So when I'm drawing these kinds of pictures, I'm drawing the time symmetric surface. Hi, Emil, by the way. And so wait, let me go back to, oops, it's going further forward. I don't want to go further forward. Yeah, here was the Penrose diagram. We slice it, let's say, along this dotted line, which is the surface of time symmetry. Then here is that time symmetric slice. And then you put the end of the world brain, then you replace the end of the world brain on that surface, and this is what it looks like. Did that answer the question?
I think so. So basically you have some kind of, in the full bulk picture, you've got some black blob that's falling into the singularity of a higher dimensional black hole.
There's no singularity drawn here precisely. So there's a three-dimensional black hole, and behind the horizon, we replaced the end of the world brain. Okay, so the end of the world brain here, perhaps it helps to draw this picture. I'll have more to say about how you construct these geometries in a minute, by the way. So if this was the end of the world brain, right, there's no singularity here because you've kind of resolved it, if you like, by putting in the end of the world brain. And you've basically replaced the physics of the end of the world brain by some geometry behind the brain. And that geometry itself contains a horizon.
Right. I'm just wondering if I should think of this then as some kind of pair of geometries that are... oh, I see. Yeah. No, I don't see.
It may help.
Why can't I think of this as basically I have two geometries that are connected by some kind of Israel junction?
That's exactly what we're going to do.
Okay.
You anticipated
by then why if I let now if I take that geometry and I evolve it forward in time, it looks like I have a black blob that is falling into the singularity of a BTZ black hole. Maybe it'll become clearer as you continue.
Let me continue one step further, and let me continue one step further, and let's just come back around the outside and discuss this again.
Okay, thanks.
If that's okay. Okay, great. And so modulo that question, which clearly I haven't answered fully yet. And by the way, Onkar, Gabor, Arjun, Tomonori, if you're there, feel free to just jump in if you want to add to an answer to a question, okay? And So there's a horizon here, and the entropy of that horizon is by construction log K, where K was the number of radiation quanta, and the evaporation protocol here is going to be the systematically increased K. So Emil, we'll come back to your question in a moment. So next, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, well, fine, suppose you have this black blob here, you have the second horizon in there, then what we could do is we could purify this state, you know, the black hole state in the inception geometry, we could purify that by further introducing an auxiliary system with which it's that is entangled. Right. So in other words, here's what we're doing. This, if you see the white part here, you can see my mouse, yes?
Yes, we can see your mouse.
Great. So you see this white part here, that was like the Penrose diagram of the original black hole, and which goes behind the, oh, I see. Emil, I think I see, I think I understand your question. And the answer to your question is yes, because you see this thing here at the top here is the original BTZ singularity right there. So I think the answer to your question is yes. well, let's come back to that in a second. Anyway, so here's the original BTZ Penrose diagram. That was indeed the singularity. This was the horizon. And behind the horizon on the other side, there was this end of the world brain. And now what we're going to do is to purify the geometry that we were going to put in here, the black hole geometry, but instead having it be entangled there with a second asymptotic region. So this is this gray part here, which then on the right here is folded back out so that you can see the original black hole region, the region behind the horizon. Then that's purified by having a second, you know, BTZ kind of region added in here. So you get a long wormhole, longer than you would have had if you didn't do this construction. So one way of thinking about this, let me first talk about this. So then if I take the equal time section here, the equal time section looks like you come in from the region A, the asymptotic region, you pass the horizon. Here, there was originally the end of the world brain. We replaced that. We noted that if we traced out the radiation, this thing could be written, the dual description of the theory on the red on the end of the world brain would have been here a black hole, as Emil said, which would eventually fall into the singularity. But then we basically purify that via entanglement with some other auxiliary degrees of freedom. That purification introduces a second horizon, and then we get this sort of long wormhole of this kind. Okay, and I will tell you in a minute how to construct it. First, let me try to interpret this a little bit. The reason why I drew the picture first in the manner here, as if it's folded together, is the auxiliary system that's going to purify, if you like, the inception black hole, the black hole that's dual to the theory of the microstates. Those auxiliary degrees of freedom are clearly naturally identified with the radiation itself, right? Because what was the thing that purified the microstate? Well, it was the radiation. So now if I first trace out the radiation and then say, fine, therefore I have a thermal state, but now I'm going to purify that with some auxiliary degrees of freedom. The auxiliary degrees of freedom are really naturally the radiation. So you could think about what's happening here is really this sort of this dual geometry should be in some sense thought about living on top of the real space. In other words, what's going on is if you think about an ER equals EPR type language, in some sense, you'd be led to say, using ER equals EPR words, that the microstates were sort of entangled by wormholes of the radiation. The radiation actually sits on this side. But by removing the radiation from the space and putting it outside the space in a reservoir, we sort of pull apart those wormholes, if you like, and then they are represented separately within this gray region. So that really should be folded on top of the original space, but we're not going to draw it like that. For simplicity, we're going to fold it out and put it to the left in this manner. So this is an interesting kind of picture where you remove the radiation to reservoir and thereby split the bulk dual and basically remove the ER equals EPR bridges and put them into the inception geometry. So that's the picture that we have in mind as to what we think we're doing.
Can I ask a question, Vijay?
Yeah.
In the original geometry, you have the outside observer sees a black hole with some entropy, mm-hmm. a Bekenstein-Hawking entropy, but then really the black hole has some smaller entropy, which is log K. Is that correct?
Well, so it depends upon whether you're talking about coarse-grained entropy or entanglement entropy. So in these settings, in this geometry, you always have a horizon over here, which is some area. So that's the coarse-grained entropy of the system. But the entanglement entropy could be smaller.
Yes.
And right. Yes.
So that's log K, right?
Yep.
So log K is bounded above by Bekenstein-Hawking entropy?
It had better be.
Okay. Right?
So the whole trick in some of the recent constructions has been with the page transition is you try to crank the entanglement entropy to be bigger than the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy by increasing K. And you should find a kind of entropic censorship where if you try to do that, the calculation we do for the entanglement entropy will naturally wind up localizing itself on the original black hole horizon and telling you the entanglement entropy can't be bigger than the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. So that's what we seek.
Now, in your picture, I'm trying to understand how to think about log K in terms of your picture. Is it related to the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy of the left thing?
Yes. So if you take this, the area of this blue thing on the left.
That's what I thought, and that's why I got confused, because it looks bigger than the one on the right.
Oh, that's because
at some point. Which seems impossible, according to what you said.
Oh, no. You can have this horizon, which is the coarse-grained entropy of the radiation.
Yeah.
You can have that be larger than the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. You could have that be larger, but the entanglement.
So that's not log K.
Well, this is log K. But because we're going to try to make the entanglement entropy be bigger than this, but it's going to be the coarse-grained entropy that can grow without bound for the radiation, because you can have lots of quanta, but the entanglement entropy, when we try to make it bigger than the black hole entropy, you'll find the entanglement entropy of the radiation will just give you the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. If that's confusing, that's fair. Would you wait for another three slides and then ask the question?
No, but can I just ask a specific question?
Yes.
So yeah, sorry. Is log k the size of the blue circle or not?
Log k is the size of the blue circle.
Okay, but you said log k is less than the Bekenstein-Hockey entropy of the right black hole. And in your picture, it looks like the blue circle is bigger than the black circle.
No. So I said the entanglement entropy. I think the thing that must be misleading is the following thing. So when I wrote this out like this, written out this way, this would imply that the entanglement entropy is kind of bounded by log k, correct? Mm-hmm. And so then if I make k, is equal to log k. And so if I make k bigger than the Bekenstein-Hockey entropy, what prevents this from being bigger than the Bekenstein-Hockey entropy? So what should really be preventing this, if there's really only, e to the s black hole microstates available, then if you make k bigger than the degeneracy of the black hole, then there's no way to make psi I orthogonal. So the entropy should not go over a certain amount. And the argument we're going to try to make is that the geometry naturally enforces that. You see, you can have many quanta, mm-hmm. and by having, you can have many, many radiation quanta. And so by having many, many radiation quanta, you can have the coarse-grained entropy of the radiation can be very high. Mm-hmm. Actually, you can even have the entanglement entropy of parts of the radiation be very high. So, for example, if you've got a bazillion quanta and you divide the quanta into two parts, you could have an enormous amount of entanglement between the quanta and the radiation, for example, much bigger than the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. But if you take all of the radiation, then the only thing it's entangled with is the black hole microstates, and there's a bound in how many of those there are. So then the idea is that the entanglement entropy of the radiation will get bounded. But that's what the page curve is supposed to be about. It's about the entanglement entropy.
Okay, so it's not true that log k is bounded above by the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy?
No, because you can have k, which is related to the number of quanta, be very high.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Okay, if I said it was bounded from above, then I misspoke.
Okay, got it.
Okay. Okay. Let's go to the next thing. So the next thing is to ask, the next thing is, can I construct these things, right? So I'm having trouble with my mouse here. Where was I? I was here. And okay, great. I'm going to go to the next slide. So so the picture here is supposed to be that after doing this sort of sequence of dualities, we describe this sort of single boundary system with microstates in terms of this long and radiation in terms of this long wormhole. So the next question is, can I construct such a geometry to describe such a system? And here the answer is, I'll show you how we do it. So the Euclidean, let me do this in the Euclidean setup. It's slightly easier to draw. Okay, so the Euclidean version of this system involves a folded cigar geometry. So let me explain that. So let's suppose I just took the BTZ black hole and I didn't do this construction with the end of the world brain and the wormhole, second wormhole going to the radiation, stuff like that. Then the Euclidean BTZ black hole is described, the geometry looks like a cigar. So that would be the following thing. You see the light colored outer shell here. Imagine that you complete the outer shell, so it's a sort of fully conical cigar-shaped thing. In that picture, the circle direction is Euclidean time, and I'm suppressing the angular direction of the BTZ, which is not going to play any role in what we have to say. So the construction we have done is to basically, in that Euclidean picture, if I cut a slice down the middle here, that's the equal time slice, right? Let's say the t equals zero slice for the Euclidean black hole. So the end of the world brain then makes a trajectory on the t equals zero slice. Over here is the horizon, if you like. And so on the t equals zero slice, the end of the world brain sits here. And if you solve the equation of motion for it, it describes some kind of trajectory. Here is a trajectory for the end of the world brain, right? So this picture here is looking into the cigar from one side. So the outer circle is like this outer circle, and you're looking into it. And the end of the world brain makes some trajectory in Euclidean time that solves the equations of motion. So the construction we have in mind is we have this outer geometry. We slice it open at the location of the trajectory of the end of the world brain, and then we put in another geometry and splice it in. So as Emil was saying earlier, well, to find a solution, what do? We impose some modified version of the Israel junction conditions. So how does that work? Well, you know, there's the BTZ metric. That's the familiar metric. It has a horizon, you know, it has an ADS scale and so on. And we are going to impose the conditions that the induced metric is continuous, and that the second condition we're going to induce is that the induced stress tensor on the brain is entirely holographic on the inception site. So that's going to be our splicing condition. So the gluing condition, again, is that the metric is continuous across this interface, and the holographic, the induced stress tensor on the brain becomes the holographic stress tensor on the inception side. You could have modified this, you know, we're making up a toy model here. So you could have imagined doing stuff like, saying that the some part of the induced stress tensor in the embryonic brain is not holographic and just sits there. You know, you could imagine making up other models, and you know, each of these models has virtues in various ways. We can talk about that later if you like. But for the moment, we're going to take the simplest choice that the induced stress tensor is the holographic stress tensor on the inception side, this dark side of the geometry. And well, you can find solutions of this form. And and I'm not going to describe in detail the solutions, and you can look in our paper for the details of how those solutions are worked out. You can write them down. When you're done, you get something like this. So here I've drawn again the equal time slice. So here is the original portion of the BTZ. The red dashed line is where the brain, end of the world brain, would have sat. And then here we have the inception side of the geometry. It's another piece of a BTZ with different parameters, you know, different ADS scale and so on, that sort of stuck together, you know, across this interface which satisfies a junction condition. So we, of course, are interested in holographic entanglement entropy. So the question is, in this slightly exotic version of the black hole geometry, where we've geometrized separately the microstates on a brain behind the black hole, how should we do the RT prescription? Okay, so here's the proposal. So the standard RT prescription basically says that suppose here on the original boundary of space in this region A1, you wanted to compute entanglement entropy. The prescription was go find a minimal surface, in this case a geodesic, that you know goes into the bulk, find the smallest one, and divide by 4 g Newton, and that's going to tell you the entanglement entropy in the field theory. So now in this context, it could happen that the said surface may fall into the brain, in which case it's sort of natural that you probably want to include the entanglement entropy on this EOW brain as part of the entanglement, right? There's some degree of freedom there that's sitting around in that piece of brain. But now we've also replaced that end of the world brain, EOW brain, by another geometry. So it seems entirely natural to suppose that the RT prescription should be extended by allowing the minimal surface to penetrate through the junction and into the new region and then come back as needed, right? That's allowed to happen. Equivalently, if you had a minimal surface that entirely here, it's allowed to be instead on this side. It just has to be homologous to this boundary. So of course, when you pass through this interface, there may be a kind of refraction condition because of course the geometry is different, the ADS scale is different and stuff like this. So it may well be that there's a refraction condition and you should take care of that properly. But otherwise, surfaces are allowed to pass through. So we're going to propose that extended RT prescription is valid. And I'll tell you in a little bit why you should believe me it's valid by a argument using the replica trick. Anyway, so now if you allow me this kind of extended Ryu Takanagi prescription, then I can use it to either compute the entanglement entropy of segments of the original real boundary of space, or I can use it to compute entanglement entropy of segments of this auxiliary region, which is really the radiation. This is now our radiation reservoir in some sense. And that's what we're going to do. Okay, so if I do that, our prescription then in total is like this. So we take the original RT surface, which is this part, and then there's this part, which either is on the brain or penetrates in the other region. We add it up, and then we minimize over the sum of these things. So that's going to be the RT prescription that we're going to use. And this is what we get if we apply it to our setup. So first, what do we want? Here is the radiation R. and we want to compute the entanglement entropy of the radiation. So this means I am looking for extremal surfaces that are homologous to this boundary R. Well, looking at this picture, I promised you that everything could be done by pictures in this case. You see that on this T equals zero surface of the overall geometry, there are two surfaces, extremal surfaces homologous to R. There's this blue dashed line, that's the horizon on the inception side, and that's equal to log K. This is what Matt was asking about earlier. And on the real side, there's the dashed black line, and that's the area over 4 g-newton of that is equal to the entropy of the black hole. So the evaporation protocol in these settings is you take K, and initially you suppose there are not very many radiation quanta entangled with this black hole, and then you keep increasing K and make it very, very big as more and more quanta come up. So the horizon area on the inception side starts out small and then eventually increases to be very big. Okay, so as it turns out, you know, there was a gluing condition that makes this geometries consistent. And remember, you're really, this is a, in these toy models, the way you're thinking is I am going to consider a setting where I have a black hole with so many microstates entangled with so many radiation quanta. I'm analyzing that scenario. Then you say, I'm going to analyze this black hole with so many microstates and a different number of radiation quanta, and you keep going like that, and you look for consistency or lack of consistency. So as it turns out, as you vary K.
So Vijay, So we're not considering an actual time-dependent evaporation process?
So we're not really considering a time-dependent, so there's no dynamics here.
Okay.
I think in most of the recent settings, for example, as I understand the constructions, there isn't really a dynamics. The increase in K stands in for the dynamics, but if you really want to talk about dynamics, as you radiate quanta out, you should reduce the mass of the black hole, for example. Right? Mm-hmm. Because it radiated energy out. So you can actually also do that here. So what you can do is you can, as you increase K out, you decrease the mass of the black hole, and then you agree that they come to equilibrium. But that's not what I'm talking about here. Here I'm imagining that a black hole of a particular mass is entangled with a certain amount of radiation. We can do the other setting too, which you just mentioned, but that's not what's being done.
Okay. So it's sort of already equilibrated.
It's already equilibrated.
Okay.
We're imagining the thing in equilibrium with a reservoir with K quanta.
I see. Okay.
Okay. So that's the setting. You can make it. You can make it more dynamical. Well, you can, dynamics involves a DDT of everything. So you can make it more faithful to as a toy model of a real black hole evaporation by saying as you extract the quanta, you need to reduce the mass of the black hole in the appropriate way and adjust things. But we are not doing that here. It will not change the results of what I'm trying to say, though, as you'll see. Okay. So as you increase, okay, great. So you start with K small and you increase it. So it's clear what's going to happen. When K is small, the blue dashed line will be smaller. So area, this the entropy of this inception horizon will be smaller than the entropy of the real horizon, right? And so what's going to happen is if you look for the entanglement entropy of R, you'll find that initially the minimal homologous surface to this boundary will be the dashed blue line. So you'll get log K, and then this log K will keep increasing as you increase K. And then when you reach the black hole entropy, the minimal surface will actually be the black hole horizon. So then it'll flatten off. So that's exactly the Page transition, which is that when once you have enough radiation, the entanglement entropy cannot increase past the black hole entropy because there's no more stuff to be entangled with. So that's what you're supposed to get. And that's what's emerging in this kind of application of the RT formula. Okay. I should probably stop to ask questions periodically. I didn't. Any questions?
Hey, Vijay, I have a question, brief one. Sure. So from your pictures, at least it looks like you originally motivated having some CFT living on this end of the world brain, giving you dynamics, but it looks like it's not your inception region doesn't have some asymptotic ADS really at infinity where it's joining onto the brain, but you're sort of working at a finite cutoff.
And, yes.
Do you have some sort of comment on that and how that?
Yeah, You should, so strictly speaking, on this side, you should, this is not a CFT, but it's a CFT with a cutoff of some kind. You might think of that as, you know, there's some parent CFT with some C, which you've TT-parred your way to some sort of finite scale or something of this kind. So this, you should really think about this as this is an asymptotically ADS geometry. And from here, we sort of reading off the parameters of what should be in here. So you should really think about this as a cutoff CFT of some kind. You float it down to some scale because of the way it's attached.
Okay.
You know, there is a mass scale on the problem, of course, because, you know, the black hole is at a certain mass and you have a certain number of states here. So that's a good point. Yeah.
Is there some sort of regime of parameters where you take ratio of Newton's constants to be large or small or something where it really does look like a sort of parametrically close to the boundary?
You would like to make this region big, right? So there is a regime of parameters where this can be brought close to the boundary. You guys, Arjun, do you remember what that is? If Arjun is online.
I don't remember the exact formula. I think we have a couple of comments related to this in section 2 of the paper, if you're interested.
Yeah, I can't actually remember exactly what the parameter regime is. You can, if you like, bring this closer to the boundary. There are many parametric choices you can make as to where you place it, of what this geometry looks like. Okay, but that isn't a complete answer to your question, Henry. But may I move on?
Can I ask a question? But it seems like in your calculations, the size of this red circle doesn't play much of a role.
It doesn't.
So, in fact, the sort of conclusions are sort of completely independent of the structure of your end of the world brain.
Yes.
How am I supposed to understand that?
So, I think that's happening because there's no detailed notion of dynamics here. The argument here is simply that if you can geometrize the theory of the microstates and then treat the entanglement associated with them in a geometric way, then universally in some way, independently of the details of the brain theory, the things that I'm trying to say will hold true. That's the kind of argument we would like to make here. I personally think that much as I'm very excited about all of these sort of semi-classical developments, I would really personally be much happier if I could construct a complete description of these systems using, you know, put the D-brains inside the black hole. The theory here really should be the theory on those D-brains and then work things out in this way. But we haven't done that. And it's likely, I think, that for some things, like do you recover the page transition, some of those details will be irrelevant. I think those things are probably going to follow from very general principles. But to have a detailed understanding of these things, you clearly want to know if you can construct a microscopic model. That's basically, you know, that's not answering your question. That's kind of sidestepping it. But I think that's the comment I have right now.
So, but for instance, this end of the world brain presumably has to have fewer degrees of freedom than the black hole you're trying to model would have?
Not necessarily. The reason I'm saying not necessarily, you'd think that it might be that way because there is, I mean, basically what you're saying is that—
I'm wanting to model some subset of the microstates. Is that not right?
Right. But on the other hand, you know, in the end, the theory you're describing here is also describing this radiation, which you've removed from the system. So it's not completely clear that the C associated with this brain, for example, needs to be less than the C of the original geometry. So we're used to thinking that it has to be less because this thing here, the original theory, contains all the degrees of freedom. But it's not clear that when we do these end of the world kinds of models, end of the world brain kind of models, that we're doing the same thing, or that the system here is precisely modeling what we just, you know, basically a subset of the original C. Right? This thing here is dual somehow to this region of space, and this is dual or is related to this region of space. and there's some, and they're being separated. The radiation has been removed from the system.
Okay.
That requires further thought. And you know, this was a point that we argued and debated about in the collaboration for weeks. And I can't say that we're still 100% comfortable with this. So that's, I think, an excellent point, which we can return to again, the question time. I am running a little short of time, so I really would like to get to the next few slides, if that's okay. And then we'll come back to this in the questions. So, okay, so one point I'd like to make is if you take this picture for granted, really what's going on is very similar to the island picture. So at early times, the green region here is the entanglement wedge of the radiation. See, it stops at this horizon. At late times, the entanglement wedge stretches all the way to the real black hole horizon. So if you imagine this left part, the inception part, being folded back to the right, whoops, what just happened? Then you have the radiation region here. So this is the sort of radiation region. This is entanglement, the entanglement wedge of the radiation within the radiation. And then there's a disconnected from the asymptotic boundary of the original black hole. This is a disconnected region in the interior that's part of the entanglement wedge of the radiation. That's the island that people have been talking about. Now, let me just take a moment to give a proof using the using replica that this extended RT prescription is valid. So here's the proof by replica trick. So remember, here is the Euclidean geometry we're talking about. This is the original BTZ. This is the sort of inception part of the geometry. The boundary of the inception part of the geometry, this part here, is supposed to be the the radiation theory. So we're supposed to take this region, just take the edge of this. So forget about the bulk. We want to compute the entanglement entropy of the radiation. So this is Euclidean time, remember, along the circle. So you cut open the Euclidean time circle for the radiation right there, and you do the path integral with boundary conditions on either side of the cut in Euclidean time. So that's cut right there, and that gives you the density matrix. So now if you, to do the replica trick, you know, the first thing to do is to compute Renyi entropies. Renyi entropies means you compute trace rho r to some power, here rho r to the power of the density matrix to power 3. And so how do you do that? You take three copies of this, you know, this boundary theory, if you like. And so I've got the first copy, the second copy, and third copy, and you stick them together cyclically. And then if you want to compute the Renyi entropy now holographically, you're supposed to fill in this boundary with a bulk geometry that meets these boundary conditions. And then we know that the path integral that you do in the bulk, the partition sum when you compute it, will be dominated by a replica symmetric. Namely here, replica symmetric means symmetric under Zn, where you're computing rho to the trace rho to the n. So, it'll be dominated by the contribution of a replica symmetric bulk saddle point. So here I've shown you one such thing. You know, here is this boundary, and you fill it in with a geometry like this, except it's got, you know, multiple bumps of this kind. So it turns out that there are two replica symmetric bulk saddles. So here's the boundary. This is this white region is supposed to be the black hole region, right? The original black hole boundary. This is the radiation boundary, and you've got two. So this is the boundary, and they've drawn it twice. This dashed line is where the end of the world brain would have been. And if you look for different kinds of saddle points, bulk saddle points that can fill in this boundary, there are two. There's one where the replica symmetric point is in the inception side, and there's one where the replica symmetric point is in the real black hole side. So this is the when this dominates, you have the Hawking phase, and when this dominates, you have the Page phase. So this is basically following the kind of techniques of Lefkowitz and Maldacena, which I think most of this audience is very familiar with. And so as n goes to one in the replica procedure, the dominant contribution to the entropy is from the area of the replica symmetric fixed point. So in this phase, you wind up having the sort of increasing entropy of the radiation. In this phase, it sort of tops off and is fixed. So this is supposed to justify our use of this extended RT formula. Now, I'm going a little slower than I expected. So I want to finish by giving you, getting to the punchline of this talk. which is that I would like to talk a little bit about the title, which is Secret Sharing in Hawking Radiation. So we're now going to try to, you remember after saying, can we give a higher dimensional version of this sort of island formula, which I hope I've justified to you, we can in this setting, that another interesting thing to consider is whether we can use similar semi-classical methods to shed some light on entanglement patterns within the Hawking radiation. So we're going to do this in two or three different ways. So here's one way. So suppose you split the radiation Hilbert space into multiple components. So the radiation is supposed to be here, remember, and have a portion R1 and a portion R2. You might imagine these to be the early and late time radiation, for example. Okay. And then if I was to draw this kind of folded picture of the geometry, it's as if, whoops, what is going on? It's like the inception wormhole geometry, you know, basically goes into two branches of this kind, and or if I fold this back to the left, it looks like there's a with the original BTZ, and it goes behind the end of the world brain, and it splits into two branches. So it turns out solutions of this form can be explicitly constructed by identifications of the hyperbolic disk along with our gluing conditions. So you can construct many such solutions. This is basically similar to the techniques for constructing the multi-boundary wormholes. And it goes like this, you know, if you want to compute the BTZ geometry in the upper half space, you identify, let's say, two geodesics, which are semicircles of this kind. And if you want to construct the long wormhole, you run a geodesic there, that's this dashed red line, here's this other red line, you splice them together, and you get the long wormhole. I'm not going to go through the details of this, it's all kind of fun to do, but it's kind of long and can be a bit tedious, so I'm just going to tell you that it can be done. And, you know, here's another example, you know, here you want to compute, this is the original black hole, here's the long wormhole with two legs. There's a way of construct this gray part of the geometry is constructed by identifying the two orange lines here in the half space, in the upper half space, and the two green lines. And then the horizons, which are this dashed blue, and this dashed blue, the horizons of this throat, and this throat are these geodesics here. And, you know, there's some work to be done to determine what the geodesics are and how they line up. So the interesting thing that I want to point out is that when you have this kind of setting where you've split the radiation, in addition to the horizons, so if you look for minimal surfaces that are homologous to one or the other of the radiation boundaries, in addition to the black hole horizons, so for example, this dashed line here is homologous to R1, right? Likewise, this dashed line, this horizon plus this horizon are homologous together to R1. It turns out that there are additional surfaces that you wouldn't have thought of otherwise, which are this, for example, this blue line, this purple line here. So this purple line, which is a geodesic, which goes in into this end of the world, basically the junction, and then refracts there, is what we'll call an infalling geodesic. And that's these purple lines here. And that's a new class of geodesics or minimal surfaces that are homologous to one of the or the other of these radiation branches. And that has a consequence. The consequence is that if you run this radiation protocol in the following way, so you start out with, let's say, you say that you do this inception technique to write down this wormhole that's going to represent all of the black all of the radiation regions on the other side of the end of the world brain. Then you say, let's just agree that I'm going to run this in a manner that the three blue horizons have the same size. That's just for simplicity to keep the discussion easy right now. Then as you increase, when the size of these horizons is very small, so there's not much radiation, you'll find that the entanglement entropy of this region R1, of this part of the radiation R1, is given by the area of this horizon. Then you keep increasing it, and at some point, you'll go past the page transition, but the entanglement entropy of this little region will still be this dashed blue line over here, given by this dashed blue line. And then at some point, the minimal surface turns out homologous to R1 here, turns out to be this purple line. So at that point, the entanglement wedge of this portion of the radiation is this purple region, which includes part of the interior. So this is what we call a partial island, namely at sufficiently late times, a part of the radiation contains the information about a part of the interior in this kind of picture. Okay, so it doesn't contain the full interior, but does contain a part of it. Okay, so I think I will skip this. This is just showing the same picture in a different way. So now this has an interesting further consequence. So suppose you've split the radiation into two parts, call it R1 and R2. Then the entanglement then, at very late times, suppose you have this purple line here being the minimal surface homologous to R1. Then the entanglement wedge of R1 contains all the regions of space behind this R, behind this purple line. And for R2, you get all the regions behind this purple line. So the regions beyond this purple line over here are not included. So if you take the entanglement wedge of R1 and the entanglement wedge of R2 and add them up, you miss some region behind the black hole, within the black hole interior, which includes the horizon. So you can push this all the way to very late times, and then these two sets of geodesics will just about touch. So this picture here is drawn looking in from this side, from the asymptotic region A. So you look in from this side, there's a black hole horizon, that's this, and then around it, there's this purple region, which is missed. So what basically happens is that if you take the union of the entanglement wedges of two parts of the radiation, it never contains a part of the interior. There's a piece that's just missing, right? Whereas if you take the union of the two bits of the radiation, so you take all the radiation and you compute its entanglement wedge, eventually the entanglement wedge will contain the entire interior. That's what we showed earlier, right? So the minimal surface homologous to the sum of R1 and R2 will be the original black hole horizon. So this basically points to kind of quantum secret sharing scheme in the radiation. An observer, if you know multiple separate pieces of the radiation completely, quantumly, you can't take the classical union of that information and recover the secret inside the black hole. But if you take all the radiation together, then you can. That's what this is supposed to show. So now you might say, well, that's nice, but this was really an artifact of the fact that you sort of made this kind of model of the radiation where you split the radiation into these two separate asymptotic regions. That's not really fair. This is some kind of slightly hokey thing. So you can allay your suspicion by going back to our previous setting where we had a single radiation region. So we didn't branch off into these multi-boundary wormholes or anything. And then you take a piece of the radiation, namely you take this radiation R. So here you might imagine that this part of the radiation boundary here, a reservoir contains, let's say, the late time radiation, and let's say this part, the R bar, contains the early time radiation, something like that. And if you repeat this kind of argument in a similar way, you'll find once again there are these infalling geodesics, and you get a similar kind of outcome that if you take the union of the entanglement wedges of different pieces of the radiation, it never contains the entire interior, but the entanglement wedge of the union of regions does contain the interior, once again pointing to a quantum secret sharing scheme. So there are other such scenarios you can construct, which are kind of cool and interesting, where you put, you start with a multi-boundary wormhole, then you sort of put end of the world brains behind two parts of the multi-boundary wormhole, and you play similar games, and interesting things happen. I think I don't want to talk about that because I have kind of run out of time. And so instead, I'm going to summarize and tell you what we showed. So we said a bunch of things. So I hope I convinced you that the entanglement island phenomenon extends to three-dimensional gravity. In order to do that, we used various ingredients. We first agreed that we could model the microstates of the black hole by these end-of-the-world brains, and that we could do this inception thing to replace the end-of-the-world brain by its dual geometry. So I think that's the part that requires the most thought, and do we agree, do we not agree, can we do that better, and so on. Once you have done that, we justify directly that with that setting that you would get this phenomenon of an island appearing in the entanglement wedge of the radiation inside the black hole, and we justify that directly by using effectively the standard Ryu-Takanagi prescription, a little bit extended to pass through the entire the entire geometry, the real geometry plus the inception geometry. So with that small extension, the results for the page transition follow. And then we justified that you could do that, that you could apply the RT formula in this extended way in the context of this inception technique by using the replica method. So all told, then, what was the outcome from doing all of that construction? Well, first, the page transition was recovered, preserving semi-classical unitarity. And then we argued that the black hole interior can be partially recovered from a subset of the radiation. So some of the radiation will give you some of the interior eventually. And then also that there's a quantum secret sharing scheme in Hawking radiation. and that you need simultaneous quantum access to all of the radiation to recover the black hole interior. Great. Thanks very much for listening.
Thank you, BJ. Questions?
I have a question. Hi. So I'm very interested in the first of the secret sharing pictures you showed, because, okay, so what you have is that a specific part of the interior is encoded in a specific part of the radiation.
Yes. Let me play this and go back to that picture. This one.
The partial island. Yeah, the partial island. Yes. So now it's definitely, so there's two facts, right? One is that it should be really hard to reconstruct from the radiation. And second is that you don't expect arbitrary subsystems of the same size to have a specific operator. Only specific subsystems will have, like maybe late radiation or, do you have any sense of like whether R1 and R2 can be arbitrary parts of radiation, or is there a sense in which R1 is really a late part, or longitudinally taken in time? Or
So this particular construction has the following features. Now, first of all, if you are early in the radiation protocol, so K is small, no? So if K is small, then the entanglement wedge of R1 will not extend, there will be no partial island. It will not extend into the black hole interior. Likewise for R2. So really, these partial reconstruction of the interior only happens when K, which is counting the amount of radiation, has become very large, well past the page transition, actually. So you only get this part, this is what, let me see if I can get this, this is what this was supposed to show, right? So this, if you take M to be the entropy associated with these sort of radiation leg horizons, they keep growing and growing and growing. The page transition happens here, when the entropy associated with these regions, with these horizons M, it becomes bigger than the entropy associated with the original black hole horizon. At that point, if I take R1 union R2, then the associated entanglement entropy is actually the original black hole entropy. But the entropy associated with the individual radiation legs, R1, keeps growing past the black hole entropy because, of course, there is allowed to be some entanglement between R1 and R2. So very late in the process, it happens that if I look at R1, or if I look at R2, they will have this partial island. So if you wait sufficiently late, a piece of the radiation will contain information about a part of the interior. So I think what is going on here is when you're that late, I said the words, you could think about R1 and R2 perhaps early and late time or something, but that's actually a bit misleading. In this kind of picture, I would say R1 and R2 are both, there are some basis for the late time radiation. So which mixes up all the radiation you have together. So basically you've collected all the radiation for a long time, you've got, K quanta, and then you're splitting that into two pieces. It's in some particular basis. This is a very weird thing in the whole island picture. You know how, it's sort of odd, right? I mean, that you would have that the entanglement with the radiation is sort of stored in some specific geometric region. You're supposed to consider specific geometric regions inside the black hole and then minimize over their area. It's sort of a bit strange. How is that happening? So I think what's going on here is, of course, you could have distilled the entanglement in such a way that in the geometric picture, the degrees of freedom that get stored in this here are really entangled with this. That's because of something happening in holography about how the entanglement has been distilled. Right. So did that answer your question?
Would you say that just splitting the radiation into R1 and R2 is the exponentially difficult part?
Is what?
So, would you say that just splitting the radiation into R1 and R2 is the exponentially difficult part, like choosing the correct subsets R1 and R2 of the radiation, so that like R1 contains a specific geometric subregion of the interior, that is what's exponentially difficult.
That is what?
Exponentially difficult.
I would say that's probably exponentially difficult.
Okay.
And the geometry is doing that for us automatically, though.
Yeah, sure.
Right, but if you gave me a pile of radiation and said, now find out which parts of this, you just give me just a bag of the quanta,
right?
And I don't have the holography tool, then I wouldn't be able to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? I actually have a question. Vijay, you said that you would love to have, you know, you're for this inception holography, you're using holography for the end of the world brain, and you said that you would love to have a more precise construction. What, you know, in terms of some actual gauge theory or something like that, what would we learn? What would we hope to learn about Hawking radiation if we had, you know, if you could calculate whatever you wanted about some particular set of D brains that you stuck in there or whatever,
well,
that you can't learn from this?
Sure. So for starters, I'd be more confident that it was all correct, just to be blunt, because, you know, how to say this, you know, none of this is at the level of a theorem, right? You know, we start off with ADS-CFT, which we kind of believe because of lots of examples where it's clearly going to work. Right? And then we say, well, you know, then we put an end of the world brain. Well, that's a little bit odd, right? You know, it's consistent with things that we, the results come out consistent, and now we've done this a few times in the community and it works. So, okay, we'll live with that. Then we'll do holography for that. Well, you know, I think we'll do this a few times and then we'll become comfortable with it. But I would just really feel happier if, you know, this could be, how to put this, right? You know, one of the reasons why, personally, I believed ADS-CFT from the get in the beginning was because there's an argument, right? You have a bunch of D brains, and then there's an argument that says you take the low energy limit of the field theory on the brain. That's equivalent to a near horizon limit of the gravity. And hey, look, you're taking the same limit in two different ways, and they must be equal, even if it's really hard to prove. So that gives you a sense that this is somehow on good footing. I would love an argument somehow like, I don't know, even at that level of plausibility. And I mean, it's not out of the question, right? I mean, so even within ADS space, so if you look at the various superstar geometries, you know, they're the half BPS black holes, the quarter BPS black holes, the 1/8 BPS black holes. So these things are all supergravity solutions, originally pioneered by Myers and Tafjord. So if you look at those supergravity solutions and you go near the near their interior, you can show that they act as if they're sourced by, you know, different families of D brains, really giant gravitons of different kinds, rotating in different ways and intersecting in different manners and stuff like that. So the thing is really a bunch of D brains in the interior that's stuck together in some way. So what are the states of the system? Well, there have to be excitations of those D brains in some way, just like the Strom-Jervafa explanation of the entropy of flat space black holes. It would just be much more satisfying, at least for me, if I could just construct everything explicitly from the components of the system. That's all I'm really, okay, is that all?
But is there anything you would calculate? Is there something specific you would learn, just aside from checking that this picture is correct, that you would like to know about Hawking radiation in detail?
Really, I do think that the question really that I would like to know at the end of the day is, I made the black hole by dropping in elephants, and I would like to recover the elephants from the radiation. So I'll come back to the interior brains in a minute. So really the way I think about this myself is, in terms of communications theory, there's a signal S which passes through this crazy quantum channel, and out of it, at the end of the day, comes the Hawking radiation, and my job is to read the message. So I need to read that it was elephants that went into the thing. That's what I'd like to do. The ideal way to do that is, of course, to know the channel, right? You know the dynamics of the channel in complete detail, and you solve it, right? So in general, I would have thought that that would be something we just couldn't do, because it'd be too complicated. Maybe the SYK model and, you know, settings like that help us to make progress. But that is really the ideal problem, right? You'd like to be able to say that, you know, you put the stuff in from the outside, it makes something specific on the inside, you know, the atoms of the black hole, whatever. And then that re-radiates, and the, you know enough about the dynamics to be able to argue for how incoming thing got encoded into the outgoing thing. I realize that, you know, that sounds hopelessly complicated at the microscopic level, but I don't think you're arguing with that point at all. I think what you're trying to say is, well, what more would you actually learn? What could you practically hope to do with the microscopic model? Perhaps It's more specificity of this kind, is what I would say. I mean, do you think that a more microscopic model in that sense is not useful?
I'm just curious what, if there are sort of very specific things that mysteries, once we've convinced ourselves that indeed the information does come out, for example, there's this classic problem of, where is the error in Hawking's calculation?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if, we're getting closer to answering that question, not just by answering by saying, well, he was using effective field theory and that's bad, but, how would you correct it?
Yeah.
To see the information come out.
You could certainly imagine if you had an actual dynamical system, right, asking questions about, let's say, well, actually, Matt DeCross, who's a student working with me, has been thinking about this kind of thing. With you have some integrable system. In this case, let's just say coupled to some chaotic system, not specifically a black hole, and you could ask specifically, can you describe the process by which the information in the integrable system gets stored in the chaotic system and then re-emitted, right? You could ask questions about exact, and if you try to do this somehow using an effective description where you've coarse-grained something about the chaotic system, what would you miss exactly? Can you put your finger on the problem, right? That's one thing. I mean, to be honest, there are also plenty of other puzzles that we don't actually talk about much lately. So for example, I don't understand why the entropy really gets stored in the area at the horizon, right? I mean, for a Schwarzschild black hole, I know that we have the RT prescription and, this, that, the other, which involves areas, and we derive things using the replica trick. But if you ask me, explain this for a Schwarzschild black hole, I can't. Maybe someone else can, but I can't. So I would love to know why that happens. Another kind of puzzle there that I have myself is, suppose I had a microscopic description of these systems, right? In many of these cases, when we talk about the D-brains making the black hole or whatever, that's really a picture that applies, at least in my head, at the weak coupling limit, right? A small G string, alpha prime is small. Then I have this collection of, basically solitons that intersect each other. It's easy to imagine. And there's no horizon though, because when you make G string small enough, the horizon is smaller than the string scale. There's no horizon to speak of. So there isn't really a puzzle to speak of because there was no horizon in the first place, the geometry. And then you're supposed to somehow crank up the coupling. And when you crank up the coupling, the horizon gets big and all of a sudden I have a puzzle, right? So before I didn't have a puzzle, I had weak coupling when I could say count states a la Strominger and Waffa, and then at stronger coupling, I do have a puzzle. So what's going on, right? There's something funny going on in that transition. I'd love to be able to put my finger directly on that because there's a limit of this where, of all of these systems, where this is just some chaotic thing coupled to some not so chaotic thing or something like that, right? But there's some other limit where it looks very mysterious, because it looks like there's a horizon. So what's going on exactly there is something that I would like to understand, that I think we would like to understand. I mean, so I think one of the things that's very nice and rather surprising, I think, about the recent developments is that it's possible to make progress in some of these conceptual questions in semi-classical gravity. I mean, it's just very surprising to me that without explicitly talking about what the microstates are, these things are happening. And maybe it's partly happening because, when you do analytic continuation, basically the analytically continued function basically sums over many features on the, if you go from real to imaginary time, sort of many oscillations and this, that, and the other on the real line can get summed up into something else on the imaginary line. So maybe that kind of thing is happening here, wherein when we do the Euclidean path integral, the Euclidean path integral knows things, but many, many features of the Lorentzian path integral that would have been hard to pick up. And so it's somehow resumming them because of some analytic property. It would be nice to understand these points, I think, precisely. I think the recent successes using Euclidean path integrals to shed light on these kinds of semi-classical properties points to something like that. There's something that the Euclidean path integral knows about the sum on the Lorentzian stuff that that's very hard to extract when you look in real time.
Yes, I agree. Thank you for that. Any more questions for Vijay? Okay, if not, let's unmute our mics and thank him.
Great. Thank you guys for showing up on whatever time zone we're in. And see you at the next one.